points together to agree with God so that he can bless us and make us a blessing in this ultimate moment, history's final hour. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. God bless you, and we'll be back with you next time.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of...
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station I'm listening to, you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Ron Brown. Hi, Ron. How you doing?
Pretty good, Dr. Sam. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing as well as can be expected under the dire circumstances.
I hear what you're saying.
No, but I think, ladies and gentlemen, you have to understand that you're witnessing the demise of the American economic system happening not by accident, but happening by intent. And certainly the large banks have plenty of money. They can borrow it at 0% instead of lending it out as they should. Why, they're investing in the stock market and hedge funds, and those American funds are being used as a carry trade throughout the world as investors buy up things in other countries with paper money that is simply being created out of nothing. Now, this is exactly the same thing that the banks have done in every one of the contractions going back to 1836 and then immediately prior to the Civil War and then after the Civil War in the 1880s, 1890s, and 1907. This is how they created the Great Depression in 1929, simply by banks stop lending. They all get together and they just have it. You know, there are only really about six major banks in the United States. So they all just happen, just by chance, to be belong to the Council on Foreign Relations Trilateral Commission, a little cabal there. And what a wonderful way to be able to pick up all sorts of businesses and farms and corporations and housing. And, of course, they've made a mistake recently as far as the foreclosures on all those poor people's homes. They would end up owning them if they had done the thing right, and they probably still are going to end up owning them and transferring the wealth from the poor to the rich. And this is how the banking system works. And I don't think that the average individual understands that the reason the economy is stifled is because the banks are not lending. And then, of course, we're doing everything we can to encourage our corporations to move overseas. We're giving them special tax breaks, abundant labor over there, no bureaucratic, you know, bureaucracy harassing them if they move overseas. They don't have to put up with the unions. They get, you know, all sorts of loans when they move overseas. But the biggest thing is no taxes. Wouldn't you like not to have to pay taxes? If you could move overseas and not have to pay taxes and make countless millions of dollars, wouldn't you do it? I don't think the average American really understands this is all contrived. Do you, Ron?
I agree, Dr. Stan. You know, it's... Of course, the banks are all in predicament now. They probably couldn't lend if they wanted to because they're all basically going underwater with all these mortgage, bad mortgages that they've taken on. Plus, all the states now are refusing to allow them to foreclose because of MERS and they don't have proper.
But you know, the thing is that the thing that really bothers me is that Obama, President Obama, could have signed the legislation that would have let him get away with violating all the laws and certainly you know, not having clear title, and he didn't do it. And basically, I'm sure, you know, if they really wanted him to do that, they would have. He'll do what he's told to do. And since the three major banks, and I'm talking about J.P. Morgan Chase, I'm talking about Goldman Sachs, and certainly Citigroup, are all part of the Trilateral Commission. There's only 70, I think, 87 members, and all the key people are there, the Trilateral Commission, and they tell Obama what to do. For some reason or other, why you know they didn't tell him to sign that legislation, which would take the big banks off the hook. There are a lot of things going on I don't quite understand. Do you ever have that feeling?
Yeah, Dr. Stan, you know what I believe? It's just a political move right now. Obama has to be believed to be on the side of the small guy for him to side with the banks on this with the political suicide, probably. My guess is...
Well, hang on to that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with Ron Brown. Well, Ron, you go ahead and pick up there, and I'll just get your thoughts on what's going on.
Well, you know, in the gold and silver market, the world is waking up to the coming bankruptcy of Western civilization. This whole fiat money system that has run its course, and it's become unsustainable. So, you're seeing a quicker and quicker flight out of all paper money. Looking for the refuge of precious metals. I really believe the big problem, what's triggering the market right now, is that these bankers have manipulated the price of gold and silver for years, and their primary vehicle for doing that
is
the futures market and all these papers.
Ron, are you there?
So what's happening?
I'm going to ask you, my producer, go ahead, Ron. I'm going to play a little music here, and we'll be back in just a moment here. Well, there we are. Hi, Ron. How you doing?
I'm back.
Okay, very good. Well, anyway, we were just talking about the gold and silver market, and basically, this is one of the most exciting markets I've seen in a long time.
Well, it reminds me of when I first got in the business way back in January of 79, and that was the beginning of the final blow-off stage in that bull market that actually started in the early 70s. And silver went from $5 to $52 an ounce in 12 months while I was my first 12 months in the business. I got kind of spoiled real quick. And gold actually went from $192 to $870. So in the final stages of any bull market, it doesn't matter whether you're talking soybeans, stock market, bond market, real estate or whatever, in the final stages, that's when it becomes a mania. And the people that didn't get on the earth on the bandwagon early start jumping on. If you remember in the latter days of the dot-com bubble, people were using their credit cards to buy stocks because it was a no-lose situation.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and I'm going to ask my producer to check it. It just sound isn't just a little tinny. I'm not quite certain what's going on. I'll get my producer working on that under any circumstances. Basically, of course... we saw it going up like a rocket, sort of backed off today. What do you think the significance is? Do you think that anything really is going to happen now? Do you think that it looks like the Federal Reserve System is going to try to stimulate the economy, which will only drive the price of gold and silver up, drive the dollar down, and create ever more problems?
Well, was it Einstein who said that doing the same thing over and over and over again and expecting a different result is the definition of insanity? And, you know, Keynesian in economics, that's the only game they know to play. They're kind of like Johnny One Note. They believe that whenever the economy slows down, they can just print money, create debt, and put their way out of it. But our economy now, the world financial system, is like an alcoholic in its latter stages. And you don't solve an alcoholic's problem by giving him more alcohol. So they're going to track you, too, because they don't know what else to do. But that'll probably put the finishing touches on the U.S. dollar. But you know, when you really get down to it, Dr. Stan, they probably know that, and they're looking to create the crisis, because out of that crisis, they will then impose their, or try to impose their draconian solutions. And then, of course, it'll be up to the American people. Are you willing to wake up, learn what's going on, and stand up and take your country back? It's possible, but the odds are not with us right now.
Well, it certainly isn't. And, of course, the media is so controlled, and this is the amazing thing. And you read the description of, you know, the various election races, and everything is so totally biased. And whether you read the New York Times, you read the local newspaper, and they always make the conservatives out as bumbling idiots, and as the people there who, like Feingold, you know, Senator Feingold, why he's such a fine, upstanding individual, and the man who's opposing him is just such a bumbling idiot. You know, and you know very well that they're slanting what they're writing. They want to convince the public that, you know, the Republican challengers, the Tea Party candidates who want to do something are imbeciles, and of course those who go along with the establishment are the real altruists. And it really, you read this over and over again, and you begin to understand that they want to fix the elections. They control the media in this country for so many years. People are losing confidence in the media. But what they've done, and I can tell you here in the state of California, we've got a woman, I think her name is Bjornels. She was with the Hewitt Packard. And basically, she's running for the Senate against Barbara Boxer. And I've tried repeatedly to get her onto our radio programs. They've infiltrated her campaign so that, you know, conservatives who want to put her on, so get her position out, can't even you get hold of their public relations people. And they do this all across the country. They plant their people in the enemy's camp so that they really are totally ineffective.
Well, I've seen that here locally, Dr. Stan. Just the ads that come out from the Democrats, it's like they're just flat lying. But the average person out there doesn't even understand what they're really saying, you know. So it's just a fixed program, you know. It's hard for a real conservative. In the first place, it'd be very difficult for a true conservative to make it up to the Republican Party, because they want to keep their establishment type people. And so, unfortunately, if people rose up and kicked every one of the turkeys out of office come November, you'd probably replace 90% of them with a very similar type mentality. It's not going to really change things. Of course, it would be a step in the right direction. But it's going to be a long way from doing what needs to be done.
Amen to that. Well, I think that hopefully we're going to get our producers going to get these this problems we're having with the sound straightened out. Under any circumstances, when we look and see what the Federal Reserve is doing, and did you see that article that speech that Ben Bernanke gave? It was on the on the 4th of October, where he talked about, you know, what we are in what we're following is just unsustainable. It can't be sustained, and it's going to have to change course sooner or later.
Well, true, and, you know, I didn't listen to the speech. I'm being a little facetious, but I ran out of barf bags, so every time he talks, this makes me upset. So, you know, it's just nonsense that he talks about. But that's all he knows to do. He's put in that position to do what he does. And the truth is, there's nothing they can do to turn this thing around without writing off the debt. And, of course, the politicians, along with the establishment, will kick the can down the road as long as they can. And they'll try to keep printing the money. But all they're doing now, at this point, you know, the average American may not know how it works, but I'll guarantee you all the central bankers around the world and all the big investors around the world know that what we're doing is pure folly, and it's just going to put the finishing touches on what's left of the credibility of the dollar. So as they continue doing these crazy things, the rest of the world is waking up and just accelerating out of dollars. And so that's forcing the Fed to print more and more money, because the creditors are now cutting us off. China's a net seller of our paper. Many countries are net sellers of our debt. And we're in a position where we need to borrow 5 to 10 or 20 times as much as we had to borrow 2, 3, 4, 5 years ago.
Okay.
If orders are not willing to loan it to you, who's going to do it? It has to be the Federal Reserve, and they're just running the printed press, and it's called quantitative easing or funny money.
Well, you know, the interesting thing about this whole thing, basically, we had one of the largest deficits this last month we've ever had. We're talking about a trade deficit over $46 billion. Now, we could solve this problem tomorrow by just reimposing tariffs so that they could not bring these cheap goods into our country. The other countries all throughout the world discriminate against American goods by one means or another. Many of them have a value-added tax. Which, of course, they have in their own country. But when they export their goods, they take the value-added tax off. They never refund it to the manufacturers. But when we bring our goods into their countries, they add the value-added tax, which makes our goods not competitive. These are the games that they play. And because our leaders really want to transfer the wealth of America to other nations, because they want equality of wealth between nations, why we allow the other countries to violate the rules, we play by the rules we've set up. We encourage the other countries to export to us. They're building a new bridge between Oakland and San Francisco. And it's a beautiful bridge. And it's all manufactured in China, shipped over here, and they're being installed. I mean, we hear all this talk about jobs. They're going to create jobs, but the jobs they're creating are recently in China. We hear Barack Obama talking about, oh, we're going to have all these green jobs, we're going to have wind energy, and we're going to have solar energy. But almost all of the solar panels used lightest in the United States today are manufactured in communist China, are subsidized by the Chinese government so they can ship them in here. But what about wind power? Why, of course, General Electric makes those windmills, but of course they're moving over to China to make the windmills. So Barack Obama will produce a lot of jobs with his green energy. But the jobs he produced will be the temporary ones where they actually just, of course, put up the windmills or install the solar panels. But they're going to be manufactured in communist China. In fact, we've just closed down our electric light bulb, an incandescent light bulb, factories here in the United States. So that all of the light bulbs we use will be fluorescent light bulbs, and they're almost all produced in communist China. Why would you do that if you were really trying to have jobs in America? And the truth of the matter is they don't want jobs in America. They're trying to wreck our economy. I think they're doing a great job.
Oh, you know, I remember when I first started learning about this. This was back in maybe 85 or 86. And I remember even 60 Minutes did an expose where they were showing, listening to telephone conversations where the government, agents, people in the government were encouraging corporations to move their plants overseas, and you know, somehow that doesn't seem to fly with a government that should be trying to build their own country.
But you see, the government is not trying to build our own country, because we have an invisible government. We have this, and you know these things, Ron. We have an invisible government that's dedicated to a one-world government, and their idea is to raise living standards throughout the world, lower living standards here, and then we'll have true equality, except, of course, for the ruling elite. They want a feudalistic system with them as the feudal lords and us as the feudal serfs, and that's what they want all throughout the world. That's why we're supporting the feudal system that they have in communist China today. When was the last time you heard any American leaders condemn the atrocious practices in communist China, where they kill and torture and imprison people? And in fact, recently somebody in prison was given the Nobel Peace Prize. And, and of course, what did they do? Immediately they, put his wife, put her on house arrest at home. I mean, anybody over there who speaks against the government is punished. Do we speak out against that? Absolutely not. We're doing everything we can to encourage the communist Chinese government and to strengthen their control over the Chinese people. And even our companies like Google that's over there go right along with the government program, monitoring what the people are doing. And if anybody's thinking about freedom, why, immediately they'll go after them. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, give us a call. We'll be right back in just a moment with Ron Brown. But, ladies and gentlemen, you're seeing the demise of the American economic system, and the average individual really doesn't understand what's going on. Our job is to try to bring out the fact that there is an invisible government. They have an agenda. They're following the plan of the Earth Charter, which on point 10A calls for equitable distribution of wealth between nations. Equitable distribution of wealth between nations. How do we do that? We raise the living standards here to that of the Mexican peasant and the peasant in China. That's what they're doing intentionally. That's why they're rewarding our corporations to move overseas. But nobody's going to tell the American people. Well, Ron, has business been pretty good recently?
You know, Dr. Stan, I probably had the biggest day in 30 years today. Just people are waking up everywhere.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work. It's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 3:16 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
And if your currency is expensive, why, of course, your products are more expensive. So what you do is you try to selectively devalue your currency. Well, when all the countries start doing that, why they all begin devaluating, and of course they begin printing more and more and more money, and this is what's happening. Certainly Japan is printing more and more money. The Federal Reserve System, people are not buying our treasury bonds, and we have to borrow at least $5 billion a day just to meet our obligations. And then, of course, we have all the treasury bonds from past years are coming due, and they've got to be rolled over. And so, basically, the interest is so low on those things that people don't want to buy them. Why should they come over here and risk their money to buy treasury bonds when they're getting 1% or 2% interest on it? So the Federal Reserve System is simply creating money and buying treasury bonds. This is what's going on. But what you do is you're increasing the amount of money in the system, and every time you do that, you destroy the value of people's life savings. This is what's happening. The average individual has no idea what's going on. They know something's wrong, but I think increasingly all throughout the world, not simply here in the United States, but people in China, people in certainly in the Arab countries, and this is what Jim Willey has said, that these people are going to the London Exchange, they're buying gold, and then they're asking for delivery, and there isn't any gold or silver out there, or very little to make the delivery. I mean, they sell 100 times what they have, and then what do you do when people want delivery? Well, then you've got to scramble to try to come up with the gold. Maybe somewhere down the line they're going to say, well, we don't have it, but right now they can buy it. But that, I think, is what's driving the price of gold and silver up. Would you agree with that, Ron?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it reminds me back in 1970, in the 70s, when Buckner Hunt, the big Texas oil man, saw what was happening, and he had billions of dollars to try to protect, and so he went into the futures market and took a position well in excess of 100 million ounces, because you can do that in the paper markets because you're trading, you know, hundreds of millions of ounces. And once he got his position taken, then he just started to exercise his right under the contract to demand delivery. And, of course, that's when silver went from $5 to $50 an ounce in 12 months, and gold went from $192 to $870. So this time around, you know, you don't have one man that was trying to move the market. You've got dozens, if not hundreds, of multi-billionaires. So they were able to break Buckner Hunt back in the 70s just by changing the rules on the exchange, and they busted him and busted the price of gold and silver down. But this time you're going up against billionaires in China and Russia and all over the world. It's going to be a little tougher task for them to control it like they did in the past. So, you know, this time, Dr. Stan, we have probably 100 times as much paper money sloshing around the globe, and probably only one-fourth as much silver, because over the last 30 years, we went for years and years and years where the world was consuming more silver industrially. In fact, we went through several years where we consumed 200 million ounces a year, more than we produced. So you keep using more than you got, eventually you're going to run out, and we're now as we get down to the bottom of the barrel of that glut of silver that was created when they demonetized silver from our coinage back in the 60s. Just as we're getting down to the bottom of the barrel is when the rest of the world is waking up to the folly of the paper system. They're losing confidence in the stocks and the bonds and, you know, all the paper assets, and they're seeking the refuge of gold and silver. So in reality, what's happening is the private sector is trying to remonetize gold and silver as money to offset what the government's tried to demonetize, 30, 40 years ago.
And really, I think that very good point was made. A gentleman I was talking to said, you know, the real money is silver. The store of wealth is gold, but basically, you know, you have gold. Why? How do you exchange it when you know gold is $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 an ounce? It's a great way of selling wealth, but it's not a good way of buying. And back down through the ages, silver has been the medium of exchange. They did away with it back in the 1870s, 1880s. The bankers wanted everything controlled by under gold, because they had the gold market pretty well controlled, and they wanted to control our entire economy. And that was what William Jennings Bryan talked about. Don't crucify silver on a cross of gold. They wanted silver to be currency again. Well, maybe it's going to become again, because we're going to have to, we have increased the population of the world tremendously. Silver is much cheaper than gold, much more easy to denominate, and it's going to be very interesting to see what happens. If you're out there, give us a call, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Ron, I'm certainly glad to hear that things are going well for you. Do you think it's doing the same for most of the gold and silver sellers at the present time?
Oh, absolutely. You know, every dealer I talk with, they're just swamped with business. So,
well, now, what about silver? You know, we see these silver, used silver, they call it junk silver, but it's 90% silver. What's going to happen? Aren't they going to run out of those silver bags one of these days as more and more people become interested and want something to give them a certain sense of security?
Well, you know, when you get in the gold and silver business, you see what's called an ebb and a flow, where certain periods of time, a certain type of silver gains popularity, and the other ones are kind of left on the sidelines for a little bit. And what we've seen for the last, well, since the 86 or so, when they first introduced the U.S. Silver Eagle, it is such an absolutely gorgeous coin, and it's gained popularity around the world. The last figures I saw, and this was before this last surge in demand, is that the sales of the Silver Eagle this year were going to be four times what they've averaged over the last 10, 15 years. So that indicates that people are starting to wake up. But I was talking to my dealer this week, and she said, what is happening is that the demand for those Silver Eagles is so strong that the dealers are having to sell off their junk bags real cheap so they can raise the money to put it back into the Silver Eagles. So ultimately what it'll do is create a tremendous opportunity in those coins, because the one thing you can say for absolutely certain is that you can't produce any more pre-65 coins. So I've seen it happen on two or three occasions that when there is a major surge in demand for silver, especially as silver goes higher in price and people start perceiving, like you said, silver is your medium exchange. So people start to perceive they need to buy silver, but they need to get it in small increments. So if the system breaks down, they can use it for barter and trade. Well, that's when a bag of dimes is going to become very, very popular, because it takes 13 dimes, just as an example.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Ron Brown. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And let me just briefly read you from Ben Bernanke's speech. It was on the 4th of October, and this is what he said. Now, remember, he's the head of the Federal Reserve System. He's really the one who is directing the course of the Federal Reserve. I think that he's probably being told by the big boys what to do, but he was expressing very obvious concern about what's happening. This is what he said. As I have discussed, projections by the Congressional Budget Office and others show future budget deficits and debts rising indefinitely. That is, future budget deficits and debts rising indefinitely and at increasing rates. To be sure, projections are, in some degree, only hypothetical exercises, almost by definition, unsustainable trajectories of deficits and debts will never actually happen. In other words, what he's talking about is we're on an unsustainable course. Unsustainable trajectories of deficits and debts will actually never happen because creditors would never be willing to lend to a country in which the fiscal debt relative to the national income is rising without limit. He's talking about people lending money to America, and he said they're just going to quit lending money to the United States. And then he went on to say that Herbert Stein, a very wise economist, once said, if something cannot go on forever, it will stop. And, of course, what he's really talking about is our economic system. We cannot keep spending money we don't have, or we cannot provide all of the guarantees. And further in the speech, he just says that with an aging population and the rising cost of health care, we promise to provide health care to the elderly, and there's no way it can be done. It's just that simple. This is a speech well worthwhile actually going over. It's available on the Internet if you have access to a search engine. Just put in Ben Bernanke, October 4th, Federal Reserve speech, and it's right there. And you'll realize, of course, what he's telling you is that we are on a course of disaster, and there's no way out of it unless, of course, people in Congress are willing to change their ways and actually begin cutting spending and begin to limit all the things that we promised the people, because there's no way we can pay for it. There's no way we can pay for Medicare. There's no way we can pay for Social Security. And nobody wants to say it. Everybody, we want to provide for the elderly. Ladies and gentlemen, you can't do it if you don't have the money. And you can't do it if nobody's going to lend you money. Our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. We have Leslie calling, but I'm going to ask Leslie to hold on, because right now, Ron, I want you to get out your telephone number and tell people how to get in touch with you.
My telephone number is 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
And Ron does actually help Radio Liberty, and we appreciate that. But let's go to Leslie calling from Tri-Cities. Hi, Leslie. How are you doing?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. Do you have a question or comment?
I had a question. With our own government making such a mess out of our economy and the fact that China already has most of our industry and all the debt that we owe China, I was wondering, has anyone ever suggested that the reason China is buying up so much gold is because they want to position themselves to eventually become the world reserve?
Ron, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, you and I have discussed that for the last 5 years. I've been saying forever that China is going to cooperate with us and go along with us and loan us money as long as it's in their interest to do so. As long as we're sending our plants and equipment and technology over there, they're going to play the game with us. But as we build their economy, they are building their own middle class, their own infrastructure, their own markets for their products. At that point, they don't need us nearly as much as they did, let's say, 5 or 10 years ago. And there will be a point, and I think we're seeing the beginning of that right now, where they start to pull the plug on us. What's the scripture say? The borrower becomes the slave to the lender. So China is now cutting back. They're net sellers of our debt now, not net buyers. So I think they're in the beginning stages of exactly what you're talking about, Leslie.
There's a place in the Bible where the Lord speaks to the children of Israel and says, you know, you will be lenders to other nations, and you will rule over them. You will be lenders to other nations and rule over them. Well, what America certainly was the major creditor nation in the world. We were the dominant force. We still have the most powerful military, but we can't afford it. We're putting out about I think that the United States, our expenses for the military is 41% of all the money that's spent in all of the world by all of the countries for the military. We have the most powerful military in the world. But we cannot afford it. We're killing off our people. We're getting them sick using depleted uranium. We're destroying the military backbone of our nation, just exactly as the French did in the First World War and the Second World War, to the point where France really is a very ineffective country today. But so this is happening in America intentionally. But Leslie, basically what has happened is China has stopped buying a lot of our products. They've actually stopped buying the a lot of our bonds, our agency bonds, that's Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, things of that sort. They've sold off almost $100 billion very quietly this last year, and they're dramatically cutting back on the purchase of our bonds. And one of these days, because right now, the Federal Reserve is having to buy most of our own debt. How can you buy your own debt? That's like pulling yourself up by your bootstraps. Well, you do it simply by creating money. But that is totally devastating down the line to the stability of our monetary system. And Ben Bernanke knows that. He's between a rock and a hard place. If he doesn't do it, the economy collapses. If he does do it, the economy collapses. And I think we're in real trouble, Leslie.
Yeah, I do too.
But your job is to try to get people to understand what's going on. It is not happening by accident. There really are people who want to destroy our economy. And they are what I call the Brotherhood of Darkness. Their agenda is laid out in the Earth Charter, and that is to equalize wealth between the nations of the world. And it all has to do with bringing about a one-world government, a one-world religion, and the new one-world leader. In fact, I just got a flyer in the mail today by somebody who's coming to our community to talk about the new world order, the new world religion, and the coming world leader. They're associated with Benjamin Cram's group, and basically, you know, but they're quite open. There is this new world leader who's coming. And if you're a Christian, I'm sure you are, listening to this radio station up there in Tri-Cities, why you realize this is the Antichrist. They understand what it's about. It's just that the average individual doesn't.
I personally believe that they've gotten so powerful and it's so they're so far into their agenda, I really don't think there's any way of turning any of it back.
We cannot do it on our own. This is a spiritual battle. Behind everything going on today are powerful spiritual forces. And without the Lord's help, America is doomed, I'm certain. Anything else, Leslie?
Exciting and scary time.
Amen to that. Isn't it wonderful to be a Christian?
Yes.
It sure is. God bless. Thanks so very much. And our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And they really are planning on the coming world leader. And I'm going to be, anybody would like copies of that flyer that they circulated all over Santa Cruz, we'd be glad to send you a copy of it. And they're talking about not only the world government, world religion, but the world leader. Who do you think the world leader is going to be? Well, if you're a Christian, you know, but the average individual just can't believe these things are real. I mean, isn't religion a fable? No, religion isn't a fable. In fact, you can't understand anything going on today unless you understand the spiritual forces at work within our society. Well, Ron, what do you think is going to happen?
Well,
less than a month away from the election, Sydney, do you think there's going to be dramatic changes? Do you think it'll make any difference when the leadership of the Republican Party is controlled by the same people who control the Democrat Party?
No, I think it's too early for it to make a major change. I think there will be a major change in the seats. But like we've been saying, all we have is really establishment Party A and establishment Party B. And I look for right after the election, the Democrats will be in a lame duck session, and they'll try to push everything they can through as quick as they can. And, you know, hopefully we'll get enough Tea Party people and enough constitutionalists that get in there that we can at least filibuster and make our arguments heard, you know, in Congress. Yeah, it's a step in the right direction, but we're a long, long way from turning the tide.
So. Well, it's going to be very interesting to see whether or not, when Congress returns, whether or not they're going to push through the tax cuts. Because if they don't push through the tax cuts, it means they want to destroy our economy. Because basically you increase taxes in the middle of a recession, why, of course, this is the worst thing you can possibly do. And they know that. And Nancy Pelosi would not allow them to vote on the tax cuts before they adjourned for this holiday, but leading up to the elections. So basically, I think it's vitally important that we watch that, we realize that we will begin to understand what they're really up to by what they do with those tax cuts.
And I agree. That would be, to me, the major thing that would tell me the tide is turning. If you get such political objections to what's going on that they're forced to go along with the, you know, extend the tax cut. But you're right. If you try to raise taxes in the middle of a recession, or I would say we're really in the early stages of a depression, you'll just put a slam dunk on what's left of the economy.
And, of course, Obama promised he would not raise taxes, only just for the rich. Well, basically, he could have put through legislation and let the Republicans, you know, squelch it, saying basically he could have said we're going to resume all the tax cuts except for those making over $250,000 and let the Republicans vote against the tax cuts. And he didn't do that. So the reason he didn't do that, one of two things, he's either incredibly incompetent or he doesn't want tax cuts for anybody. He doesn't want to preserve them. He wants to raise the taxes on everyone, and that's what it's all about. He promised he wouldn't, but he's lied. He lied about certainly the tax increases. Certainly if you look at the Obama health care bill, it's full of tax increases. And he says, well, there is no, you know, there are no, death commissions in there? No, they're in the stimulus bill. They passed those earlier, and they actually have this provisions there where there are going to be committees in Washington, D.C., who will determine and set out guidelines for what care will be appropriate for people at what ages. Now, you could have somebody who's 80 years old, who's just about ready to die, and maybe it would be not be expedient to give them open-heart surgery. You could have other people who are 80 years old, who are vibrant and capable, like me, and first heart surgery would give them a second lease on life. But they are going to decide in Washington, D.C. who lives and who dies. The death panels are there. And it doesn't matter what Obama says. He cannot deny the fact that this is the ultimate program. Well, let's go to Joe, who's calling us from Michigan. Hi, Joe. Do you have a question or comment?
Yeah. Hi, guys. How are you doing tonight?
Doing just fine.
Okay. That's good. Ron, I don't know if you remember me. My name is Joe Zabrowski.
Yeah, sure. I remember you.
Yeah. So I had a question for you guys. I just heard recently, I think it was yesterday I heard it, that there are 420 Federal Reserve banks that are demanding a global currency. I don't know if you guys heard about that. So my question relative to silver, because I got some silver from Ron there, and gold as well. Let's just say that hypothetical situation, let's say that they do change it to a global currency, what would be your response relative to, you know, if they did go to a global currency, would you be saying that we should be cashing in our gold and silver at some point during, close to the time when they go to the global currency?
All right, fine, Ron. What do you think? If Joe has some gold and silver and they're going to go to a global currency, what should he do?
Well, to me, it's really this simple. Gold and silver is the refuge from a failing system. But as we've talked about, the agenda is to do away with our constitutional republic. And it's our constitutional republic that is a rule of law based on biblical principles that allows us to even accumulate wealth. If you don't have private property rights, then there is no wealth. So I tell people, you buy gold and silver so that you become part of the solution and not part of the problem. But if we allow them to take us into a global government, then they'll just come and confiscate everything you have. So, you know, whether you sell your gold or not, you just have to hold it as long as you can so that you don't go into debt. But let's face it, if we lose our Constitution, then we're now under the rule of man, and that's tyranny. How would like to be ruled by the man that's up there with unlimited power to do what he wants, as long as you have a constitution that can resist some of his agenda, then you have hope. But if he gets total control, then there is no hope for anyone, the middle class.
So are you saying to hold on to it indefinitely, or I'm just, because I had talked to you in the past and you had told me, it was a couple of years ago, I think you told me that, you know, when it all, you know, if they ever, we were talking about the Amero back then, if they changed our currency, the key is to, use the value of your gold and silver. I thought you had said purchase hard assets that you could, you know,
right,
use in the long run.
Yeah, I get that question all the time. When do you sell your gold and silver?
Yeah.
One thing you don't do is ever sell your gold and silver to go back into the paper money that's being destroyed. So what you do is you develop a strategy that says, okay, when I get to a point where I can sell a fourth of it, a third of it, you know, pick your own poison, but when I can sell a portion of it and get totally out of debt, then by all means do that. Because our number one priority should be to be totally out of debt. But yeah. After that, you only sell your gold and silver to exchange it for something tangible and real. You know, do you need a food storage program? Do you need a 5 acres in the country? Do you need a generator? In other words, you just trade your gold profit for something that's tangible and real.
And the other thing is, Joe, if they have a world currency, will it be backed by gold and silver? If it's not backed by gold and silver, it's simply another fiat money system, and they can really just keep printing money as long as they want to. That's the problem we have today. The reason you have to have gold and silver is to make the bankers and the government act responsibly. Otherwise, if you have a printing press, you can actually print yourself into prosperity. And everybody can live wonderfully as long as we keep expanding the money supply. But one day, the day of reckoning comes. This is what they've done time and time again. If you've never read the little book that we carry, Fiat Money Inflation in France, it tells what happened after the French Revolution in 1789. You order it, it's inexpensive. But the important thing, reading that book is like deja vu all over again, because we're doing exactly the same thing that the French did at that time after the revolution. And a few years later, why, of course, they did away with the king. They assassinated the king, Louis and Marie Antoinette. And then what did they do? Why, they brought in another dictatorship, and they were back with a new king. His name was Emperor Napoleon Bonaparte. Thanks for much for calling, Joe.
Thank you.
Well, Ron, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, you know, Dr. Stan, people that have been following this Keynesian economic philosophy.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-dried guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-dry guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.
The time when certainly we need to remind our listeners that my ministry, Radio Liberty, is primarily listener-supported. And if you're out there across America and you're in a position to help, we'd love to hear from you. And if you're not, why? We'd appreciate your prayers for our provision and our protection, because we're on the front lines of a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization, because there really are people who want to destroy our civilization and bring in the new world leader. And that's what the flyer I got just today put on a program in Santa Cruz by Share International, and it's going to be where they're going to be discussing this new world leader. But ladies and gentlemen, I think it's only a matter of time before the new world leader arrives, and you better understand that we're talking about one part of the unholy Trinity. Just as we have a Father, Son, and Holy Ghost in Christianity, they have Satan, the Antichrist, and the false prophet in the other realm. And basically, we have the Ten Commandments. They have their Ten Commandments. They call it the Earth Charter. The Ten Commandments of God are kept in the Ark of the Covenant. The Ten Commandments from the satanic side are kept in the Ark of Hope, which is displayed across our country. And last thing I heard, it was back in Washington, D.C. The Ark of Hope, the satanic counterpart of the Ark of the Covenant. When you understand this, it all makes sense. You need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You need to get the book, Satanic Crimes, and the four CD set that goes with that. You need to get certainly our 4-CD set on the supernatural, and the book that goes with that, The Beautiful Side of Evil. You need to get the 4-CD set on the wisdom of Malachi Martin, where he will tell you about the satanic sacrifice held in the basement of the Vatican, which was coincide with a human sacrifice carried out elsewhere. It really happened. There really are satanic forces in the Vatican, but there are satanic forces working within the Protestant religion, working within the Jewish religion, working within the Muslim religion, working within religions throughout the world. And you think the battle is between Christianity and the Muslim faith? Basically, this is a spiritual battle for the souls of men and the survival of Christian civilization. Our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com, and you can watch our DVDs, listen to our programs there, you can read our newsletters, and you can get the background that you need to be able to stand in times like these. We actually have several books we think are important. One is Fire in the Minds of Men, written by James H. Billington, the Librarian of Congress, where he talks about the secret societies behind the French Revolution, how the Illuminati was involved, and how all of these secret societies are founded in the occult. And then he follows the course of these secret societies creating wars and revolutions right up to the Cuban Revolution in 1959. Now, he's not going to tell you about the Council on Foreign Relations. He's not going to tell you about the influence of the Illuminati in the United States. But we got from his office a copy of the treatise on the Clintonian Illuminati, written in 1804. The Illuminati was here, alive and well, and it still is, in the upper echelons of Masonry. And Albert Pike even talks about, Aleister Crowley talks about the upper echelons of Masonry. He was part and parcel of it. Aleister Crowley was a Satanist. And Sidney, if you haven't heard my interviews with William Ramsey, who's written a book on this, I think it's very, very important. Anyway, under any circumstance, we hope that you'll go to our webpage at radioliberty.com. There you get the items we have also available now. Scarlet and the Beast, Volume 1. And we have, of course, Tragedy and Hope, History of the World in Our Time, which is written by Professor Quigley, all about the secret society that controls America. today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story. Hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Grigg. Hi, William. How are you tonight?
Dr. Stan, I'm doing well. Thanks again for this opportunity. It's always great to talk to you.
Well, what are we going to be talking about tonight?
The first thing I need to talk about is a piece of unexpected good news. You may have shared this with your listeners already today. Some of them might already be aware of this, but last week, I made reference to this case of baby Cheyenne, who was born to a couple in New Hampshire at Concord Hospital last week. It was a week ago this past Wednesday that she was born. Within a few hours, she was abducted from the hospital by the so-called child protection bureaucracy. Her birth father, Jonathan Irish, is somebody who was distantly associated with the Oath Keepers, which was misidentified by the child so-called protection service in the affidavit, the neglect affidavit, which was filed against the mother, Stephanie Taylor. The Oath Keepers was misidentified as a militia. It's not a militia group. It's an association, very informal association of active duty and retired law enforcement and military personnel who are committed to the defense of the Constitution. There's a number of unconstitutional orders they will not obey that have to do with disarming the American populace and otherwise inflicting extra-constitutional and completely unjust restrictions on their liberties. Mr. Irish and apparently his girlfriend, he describes her as a fiancé, Stephanie Taylor, had some distant relationship to this group. That was listed on the affidavit of neglect as one of the reasons why they were unsuitable parents for this baby Cheyenne. Should point out that Stephanie Taylor has two children by her first husband, who's not considered a suitable parent for those children. The children were taken from her and during the last 21 months or so, not given to the custody of the father, and they were apparently put into foster care. But baby Cheyenne was only a matter of hours old when Stephanie Taylor was deemed to be an unsatisfactory mother by virtue of the supposed act of neglect that resulted in the birth of Cheyenne. If you read the affidavit, literally, the act of neglect cited in that affidavit is that she gave birth to this child, because that's the act that's mentioned, and the location of the supposed act of neglect was this hospital. Reverse engineer that proposition, and you end up with the conclusion that the only way Stephanie Taylor could have been deemed a satisfactory mother is if she had aborted the child, if she had killed the child in utero, or if she had had the child killed during delivery. In the act of infanticide commonly called partial birth abortion, she would not have been considered a neglectful mother. But by virtue of the fact that she gave birth to a beautiful, healthy daughter, she was considered neglectful and the child was stolen from her. Well, yesterday, the local district court held a family court hearing and a judge gave Cheyenne back to her parents. This almost certainly would not have happened had it not been for the fact that Jonathan Irish went to the non-government aligned media, the independent media, to talk about what had happened to him and to make public the fact that he had been singled out for this treatment. He and his family, I should say, had been singled out for this treatment in large measure because of their political association. Now, during the week that intervened between this act and the reunion of the mother and father and the child, this became a national controversy, and it had it not been for that fact, I don't doubt for a second that baby Cheyenne would have been swallowed by the bureaucracy and never been seen again by her father and her mother.
Well, it's good to know that sometimes information you can get out, and I know you've written extensively on this. You've been bringing this fact out, and so I think that you certainly deserve part of the credit for embarrassing the bureaucracy, who seems so intent upon stealing children away from their parents. And on rare occasions, it might be justified, but they do far more harm than good. And it's all about money. They get paid by the federal government for every child they can steal, and they destroy the lives of so many children. Go right ahead, William.
Well, to enlarge briefly on the point that you just made, Dr. Stan, about the financial incentives that exist for the seizure of children from troubled but satisfactory homes by a so-called child protection bureaucracy that is itself a form of institutionalized abuse, the top story on my blog, Pro Libertate, which was posted on Wednesday, is entitled Nobody Gets Their Kids Back, and it's a case study, actually a multiple case study involving exactly what you described from the state of New Hampshire. I discovered a woman by the name of Dorothy Knightley. She works in a government-approved transportation service that offers transportation to people with special needs. She's worked with special needs people, both children and adults, for decades now. She's somebody who's got a perfectly impeccable record as a citizen and as a grandmother. She has a couple of daughters who had children under less than optimal circumstances. And she has lost, that is to say, Dorothy Knightley, as a grandmother, has lost at least two of her grandchildren into the bowels of the child protection bureaucracy in spite of the fact that she went to school to receive a certificate as a foster mother. She crossed all the T's, dotted all the I's, got all the tickets punched, played by the rules, and she still couldn't get a license to become a foster mother. There was a home study that was scheduled of her home once these children had been taken from her daughters, once the grandchildren had been taken from the daughters and put into foster care. As part of the process of becoming a potential foster or adoptive parent to her grandchildren, she agreed to a home study, and the bureaucracy never got around to doing this. Well, one of the aspects of this story that she points out is that her daughter, who gave birth to a child who was literally stolen from her just within days of being born, was approached by one of these so-called child protection workers and asked to fill out an application for Title IVA federally subsidized state welfare subsidies. That is to say, it's what they call a TANF, T-A-N-F proposal. It's a form of federally backed state welfare benefits, supposedly temporary in nature. Well, Dorothy Knightley, the grandmother in question, prefers to be called Dot. Dot's daughter did not want to be part of the state welfare program because she was going to be living with her mother, with the child's grandmother, and the grandmother did not qualify for these benefits, and they wanted to take care of this as a family. They didn't want the government to intervene. They didn't want either the aid or the restrictions and the surveillance that would come with the aid, so she refused to fill out the application. The caseworker filled out the application herself and signed up the child for federally subsidized welfare benefits, and within a couple of days, the mother was accused of neglect.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Go right ahead. Now William is telling a story of a woman, a grandmother, who had actually had a daughter who had a child out of wedlock, welfare people came to the mother and said, now we want you to fill out this form for a federally subsidized welfare. That the girl wouldn't do it, and then because she wouldn't do that, why they moved in, they took her child away from her. Tell the rest of the story from there.
What had happened is that the mother had been on a morphine drip, like a 19-hour morphine drip, because of a very difficult pregnancy involving placentia previa. This is usually, from what I understand, treated as a cause for an emergency C-section. For whatever reason, the C-section was not performed, but the mother was on this very powerful narcotic-strength pain reliever while she was undergoing this very difficult labor. Well, because of the fact that the child, when in utero, shares the same circulatory system as the mother, there was morphine in the child's urine sample. And this was taken as evidence of drug abuse by the mother, which, of course, is nonsense on stilts because the mother was in the hospital receiving morphine for pain. But this was used as evidence of neglect of the child in utero. And this is a very similar situation to the one involving baby Cheyenne, because the specific act of supposed child neglect here had to do with the process of giving birth to the child. And I really want to italicize this, because this really, I think, throws into sharp relief the real motives here in terms of trying to find some way of criminalizing motherhood. I mean, the very act of giving birth here is defined in certain circumstances as a form of culpable abuse or neglect by a mother for the purpose of the child statute bureaucracy laying claim to a newborn child under this obscene doctrine of parens patriae, that is to say, the parenthood of the state. Well, this woman, her name is Candy, was on a morphine drip. The baby had morphine, just trace element of morphine in the urine sample. This was taken as evidence of abuse. And so that was the pretext for the invasion of the DCYF, the Child Snatcher Bureaucracy in New Hampshire. So on September 2nd of 2005, just hours, days actually, after the birth of this child, there was a DCYF employee who tried to compel Candy to apply for a program called Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, TANF, TANF. This is a federally subsidized welfare program in New Hampshire. Candy refused to do so. She pointed out that she and her daughter, the newborn was named Isabella, planned on living in the grandparents' home, and they wouldn't need welfare assistance or supervision. Now, a couple of weeks later, in spite of the fact that the mother refused to take the aid, the caseworker filled out the paperwork and filed it anyway, checking a box, which is on the actual application, a copy of which I have on my desk, that said that the parent refused to sign off on it. In other words, they anticipate the parents are not going to want to be involved in this program, but supposedly the signature of the caseworker is significant to get the people involved in this welfare program anyway. That's September 28th, and that was 2 days after the preliminary hearing against this mother upheld a neglect charge. And just a few days later, Isabella was kidnapped at the hospital by the DCYF, and the basis for this was the fact that the mother was being neglectful by not accepting the welfare benefits, and, of course, the strings that came with it. And the point is that if the child had been with the mother, if the child had remained with the mother and the two of them had lived in the grandmother's home, the state of New Hampshire would not be getting tens of thousands of dollars in annual subsidies for basically the maintenance of this child. But by virtue of the fact that they seized the child, they kidnapped the child, and they terminated the parental rights of this mother, they now are getting that subsidy. Now multiply that case by several thousand, you've got a pretty big chunk of change that is being given to the welfare bureaucracy and the so-called family welfare services in the state of New Hampshire in the name of protecting children who are seized from homes in this way. So you're exactly right, Dr. Stan, when you say that this is being done for money. The biggest difference, of course, is that you can't pay ransom and get your kids back. What happens is that when the kids are stolen, they are paid. The child snatchers are paid by the taxpayers by way of the federal government as a reward, as a bounty, not as a ransom, but as a bounty for kidnapping these kids. Now, this woman, Dorothy Knightley, who is a very intelligent, well-spoken, and as people in such circumstances tend to be, a person who is in mastery of all these complicated and abstruse details of the whole child snatcher apparatus in action, she points out that there are conversations she overheard involving people in the so-called child welfare bureaucracy in which it was made plain that they're running something akin to a white slavery operation. Now, her offspring, her two daughters who had the grandchildren, are Anglo. They married people of Hispanic background. One of her children, who is lost now, heaven only knows where, in the child welfare bureaucracy, is a young man by the name of Austin. He's 10 or 11 years old. He's roughly the same age as my third son, Jefferson. And if you look at him, he's a beautiful, round-headed, brown-eyed, brown-skinned boy of partial Honduran descent. The pictures that were available of him when he was younger, he was kidnapped at age 5, almost 6, by the DCYF. You take a look at the pictures of him when he was young, playing with his grandfather and playing with his sister, Allie, who was also kidnapped but ended up being put into the custody of a father who had been accused, strangely enough, of molesting the two of them. They'd accused him of a child molestation in order to justify seizing the kids. Then they turned the infant daughter over to a guy who supposedly was a child molester. But when you take a look at the pictures of Austin as a very young child, he's bright-eyed, he's curious, he's friendly, he literally radiates joy and enthusiasm of life. Well, he was taken at age 5, and as he was being dragged away, kicking and screaming by the police, literally, they had 3 police officers dragging this poor kid away from his grandmother's home. Everybody in the neighborhood was just heartbroken over the spectacle. He was taken to a foster home, and within a week, he tried to kill himself. He was so traumatized by what had been done to him. He was so terrified in his new circumstances. These armed strangers had intruded into his home and seized him from the bosom of his grandparents. And next thing you know, he's in a home with people he doesn't know and circumstances he can't understand. He tried to kill himself. Well, as a result, he was committed to a mental institution and put on psychotropic drugs, which have reduced him to a shambling, blank-eyed wreck. You take a look at photos of him after the benevolent child protection bureaucracy seized him from his grandmother. You don't recognize the young man. It's doubtful that he really fully understands what's happening in his life right now because he's always drugged up. And one of the reasons why his grandmother was not permitted to take custody of this grandchild, despite her obvious interest in his well-being, despite the fact that she's a reputable, upstanding citizen who has all the qualifications necessary to become a foster parent or an adoptive parent, is because there was a concern that she would take him off these drugs. He doesn't need to be on drugs. The only trauma that he's experienced that put him into a state of mind where he was a threat to himself, and this is something that was admitted to Dot and to her husband and to Austin's mother in a conversation. The only thing that put little Austin into a state of mind where he was a danger to himself was the trauma of being separated from his family. And the same people that inflicted this trauma on him are now prescribing a remedy which is turning him into a vegetable. And because his grandmother did not consent to this and would not have permitted it to go forward, he was considered to be completely unsuitable. And then there's another wrinkle to the story, another permutation of cruelty that simply beggars description. And that is the fact that during one of the supervised visits that the grandmother and the birth mother were able to have with Austin in the presence of DCYF officials, this little boy looked up at his mother. His mother's name is Holly. And he looked at his grandmother and he said, "They tell me that Holly isn't my mother anymore." And they'd already at this point changed his name. They'd filed the legal paperwork to change this boy's name, which is, of course, illegal until and unless he's been adopted. And he was in a pre-adoption phase here. And his grandmother looked at him and said, "Honey, Holly is your mother. She will always be your mother." Well, at that point, the commissars stepped in, separated the mother and the grandmother from this child, and they were never again permitted to see or talk to him. Because they had admitted, they'd spoken a fact that the Child Services bureaucracy found to be unacceptable, which is that he is still very much the son of the mother who gave birth to him. And he's now been adopted as of, I think, December 2009. He was adopted. Nobody knows where he is except for the people who kidnapped him and the family into which he was adopted. And this is, once again, tragically typical of the kind of things that go on every single day at the hands of the so-called child protection workers. That's not to say that everybody who is employed in a child protection agency is deranged or perverted or demented or cruel, incorrigibly vicious, or so forth. It's to say that there is something wrong with the institutional mindset here, and it's rooted in this notion of parens patriae, as I mentioned before. The idea that the state is the parent and that parents, whether biological or adopted, are only incidental. They're ancillary to the state in bringing up the state's children. And this is a concept of great antiquity, and it's one that unfortunately has been infused into the warp and weave of American social policy for over a century and a half now at either the state or the federal level. It's something that really gained a foothold thanks to the Fabian socialists and their American counterparts in the late 19th or early 20th century. If you read the literature of the Fabian socialists on social issues, particularly the writings of H.G. Wells, who in addition to being more or less the inventor of modern science fiction was also a propagandist for the Fabian socialists, it's pretty clear that they wanted to disrupt the natural relationship between mother and child. They wanted to disrupt the natural and wholesome relationship between the husband and the wife. They wanted to remove the father to the extent possible as a source of social authority. That's one of the unspoken but very real objectives of the feminist movement, is to combat what's called patriarchy. But you remove the father's influence in the home, then really the state becomes the surrogate father. The mother becomes, if you will, a concubine to the state, and the children, of course, are considered the property of the state. And we cannot lose sight of the fact that often this is done for reasons of vulgar greed, masked as delicate philanthropy and altruism.
Well, Ethan, I think it's really far more sinister than that. I think that there really is an effort to destroy the home, to destroy the lives of these children. And you say, oh, well, nobody would want to do that. Ladies and gentlemen, there really are evil and wicked people out there. Senator Nancy Schaefer was a Georgia senator. I knew her very well. She fought this whole system.
Yeah.
They actually spent, I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars to get her out of the Senate. And shortly thereafter, she was shot, supposedly by her husband in the back. Go right ahead.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Well, many men begin having prostate symptoms when they get to be 60 years of age, so Radio Liberty is offering a great product. It's called Prostate Support. It's put together by one of the country's leading health food manufacturers. It contains ingredients which have been proven to work. I know health experts who take the product, and I use it as well, and I think that really is very effective. In addition, we have a product for women during that difficult time of life. It's called Menopause Support. And lastly, we have a product for people who have chronic difficulty with their immune system and nothing else seems to work, it's called Immune Support. All are available by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. These products are compiled by a very reliable company. Give us a call, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
In these times of falling values, high unemployment, loss of income, and with hyperinflation on its way, we have created a one-ounce silver coin with a cross and the words of John 3:16 on one side and the American Eagle on the other. These coins are mural finished, 0.999 silver. Each of these beautiful coins will always have an earthly store of value plus the cross with John 3:16 as an eternal value. Go to www.john316coin.com and call 1-877-316-COIN while supplies last. Order these beautiful 1-ounce John 316 American Eagle coins today by going to john316coin.com and calling 1-877-316-COIN.
That really was not particularly significant for any reason. It was in the middle of the very verdant area of Mississippi, and it acquired a certain significance after a group called Camp Sister Spirit sprung up. They were in a wooded area, secluded area, some miles outside the small town of Ovette, Mississippi, and it was being run by a transplanted group of militant lesbian feminists who'd been involved in all kinds of interesting things. They're self-described practitioners of Wicca. They were people who'd been involved in abortion clinic interventions, that is to say, they'd formed the human phalanx to defend abortionists and to keep customers away from pro-life activists who were trying desperately to persuade the mothers not to go through with an abortion, that kind of thing. Well, when I investigated the story, there was some controversy as to whether the local town could use some kind of restrictive zoning ordinances or other measures not to prevent Camp Sister Spirit from becoming sort of a magnet for attracting activists of that kind. And it looked to me like what was going on was that there was a test case being created here for federal intervention, because there were a couple of staged incidents involving purported hate crimes against people who were part of that commune. And they were in touch with Jan Arena, and they wanted Jan Arena to investigate and send the community. I'm trying to remember the name of the Justice Department organ that's involved in investigating so-called hate crimes. At the time, there was a special unit of the Justice Department involved in this. They were calling for federal intervention, so I said, okay, what it looks to me is that they're trying to set up a situation that would create a pretext for a precedent involving federal intervention on behalf of people in circumstances like this that would be used to criminalize opposition to militant homosexual activism. That's what I suspected what was going on there. But as I looked into this, I discovered that there was an even uglier thing happening here. This group, Sister Spirit, had been involved in what was described as an underground railroad. It involved the custody disputes that would sometimes erupt between women who became radical feminists and the husbands they decided to divorce. And when there were children involved, girl children particularly, they would sometimes end up disappearing from whatever place in the country this couple lived in, and they'd end up in San Francisco. And what would happen is that they would be taken into this network and passed from house to house and eventually show up someplace in San Francisco surrounded by people who were members of the most militant fringe of the sapphic movement. They called themselves Mothers Against Raping Children, the assumption being that if you're married to a man of normal heterosexual impulses and outlook, that the man in question is a rapist, irrespective of whether he's actually raped somebody, you know, by virtue of being a man who is, you know, basically wired in the appropriate fashion, he's to be considered a rapist. So because all men are abusers, all men are potential rapists, you have to protect your female offspring from them. And so they had this underground network that was being set up basically to traffic in girl children, young girls, who were the offspring of men and the women who were brought into this lifestyle. Now, the reason I bring this up is because this is a group which overlap with a lot of the social service agencies nationwide. These didn't really have a crackdown on what was going on here, where these children were being stolen away from fathers who had legal and moral right to raise them in a relatively normal environment. That's the sort of thing that you would think a child protection bureaucracy would look at amiss. But actually, they were being passively and in some instances actively helped by the so-called child protection bureaucracy. And there are people who are members of this underground, the so-called Underground Railroad, who are actually full-fledged, full-time, paycheck-drawing members of the so-called social services bureaucracy. And so you have to add this element to the discussion when you're talking about people who are seeing their families being broken up through bogus child abuse accusations and their kids being seized basically for money. There's an ideological component to this that is not merely something being generated by a bureaucracy. It's something that's animated by a deep, I believe the appropriate word would be misandry, a deep hatred for the male of the species in addition to a hatred for the patriarchal or traditional home. And so that's part of the witch's brew we're dealing with here, and I think that people of that sort are perfectly capable of doing terrible things like what we think happened to Senator Schaefer.
Well, it's a horrible thing to contemplate. I knew Nancy very well. I interviewed her a number of times, and she was a lovely lady, and we were going to be working on a project, and then the horrible realization that she'd been murdered, and it was not a murder, you know, it was not a dual, an agreed-upon suicide at all. But the fact she was shot in the back has always given me that strange feeling that she had stepped on too many toes. She was getting too close to the centers of this totally evil procedure, and that is stealing children from their parents and turning them over to child molesters in many instances.
While a storm cloud gathers far across the sea,
Well, William, you go right ahead.
You made a point earlier in the show, Dr. Stan, is noting that there are circumstances where children have to be protected against genuine instances of abuse. The thing that I find striking about cases like the one involving Cheyenne Irish is that the specific act of neglect here was not neglectful. She was simply born to a mother who permitted her to be born rather than killing her in the womb, which means, of course, that she could have prevented the neglect charge by having the baby killed before delivery or during delivery. But if the concern, as the affidavit said, was with the background of the father, who allegedly had been involved in domestic violence episodes, has never been prosecuted for the same, and the same is true of the mother. Now, why are you stealing the child rather than dealing with the supposed threat represented by a purportedly abusive father? Why do you steal the child from the mother in the hospital when supposedly the father is the problem? And that's also very typical of the sort of things that I have seen as I've looked into cases of this kind, which of course are terribly, terribly commonplace, is that in more instances than not, you have child protection intervention in ways that are perfectly calibrated to traumatize the child while leaving the supposed abusers with no due process by way of clearing their names and establishing that they're suitable parents or suitable custodial grandparents. That's the same kind of a situation that happened with Dorothy Knightley and her daughters. Whatever you think of the daughters and the problems they had, the grandmother was an eminently sensible choice to be a custodial foster parent or adoptive parent. But the DCYF in New Hampshire chose a course that was guaranteed to take those children out of the home and alienate them from family members who love them, including grandparents who could provide for them and raise them up in a perfectly suitable way. And one of the things that happened to bring this about was a phony accusation of child molestation that supposedly took place in the home of the grandmother, and that charge disappeared magically as soon as the children had been taken away.
And hold that thought. Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan and William simply talking about this tragic instance where the grandmother wanted the children and they were simply taken away. A little boy's mind was destroyed by being put on psychotropic drugs, and they would not turn the child over to the grandmother because she might have taken the child off the psychotropic drugs. And the reason the child was on the psychotropic drugs because it was upset because it had been taken away from its parents. So they create the problems and people say, oh, well, they wouldn't do this on purpose. Ladies and gentlemen, there really are evil people out there. I do not know in this instance, but there really are people out there who hate children, who hate families, who hate everything our country stands for. And many of these people can be in the most dangerous positions when they work for government. I have been to the Centers for Disease Control. I have talked to some of the people there. And I will tell you that I encountered some very, very wicked people. Why would they be working for the Centers for Disease Control? Because if you wanted to do harm to mankind and to our country, you would work for a federal agency that would be able to affect the lives of countless millions of people. That's why you'd go to work for the CDC. And there is no question in my mind that these were inherently evil people. But go right ahead. They're also sort of people, many times, you go into social work, sometimes they're good people. But and I'm certain some of the people are trying to do a good job, but they don't speak out against the people who are really totally destructive.
That much is certain. And one of the things I've found is that the best and usually the most detailed accounts I get of what goes on in bureaucracy of that sort come from people of goodwill who enlisted in them in good faith because of a genuine desire to help children who are in trouble, who find out, much to their dismay and disgust, that that's not the business of the bureaucracy they signed up to serve. As a matter of fact, I'm going to be talking with somebody of that description tomorrow morning. He got in touch with me after I published this piece at Pro Libertate, the blog. Once again, the title is Nobody Gets Their Kids Back. I'm thankful that that title is inaccurate, because if you make a big enough fuss, sometimes you can get your kids back, but it literally requires an exceptional convergence of good fortune and public attention in order to achieve this. But after I published the story, I was contacted by a number of people who have been involved in the CPS, by whatever name it's known in various states, who've got horror stories that they've been willing to share with me, and some of them are genuinely terrifying. As a matter of fact, I've yet to come across a story that doesn't chill me to the bone. I need to exercise a point of personal privilege here. Almost exactly a year ago, my wife and I were hotlined. Just one morning in, I believe it was late August, we get a knock at the door, and there are two people on the doorstep, one of whom we recognized, the other of whom I did not recognize. And one of them was a social worker we had known for several years. The other was a social worker we'd never met before. And the social worker we knew introduced the other and said she's with the Department of Child Protection. And instantly I said, okay, depending upon how this conversation turns out, one way or another, Corinne and the kids are not going to be in this home much longer. And I noticed that she had a recording device that she was trying to conceal. And she said that they had received a tip, and of course they're an anonymous tip, that our children were being neglected and abused. And she wanted to come in and inspect the house, and I said, well, I can't permit you to do that until you come back with a proper warrant by a suitable judicial authority. I said, you're probably a conscientious person, you strike me as professional and well-intentioned, but this is an adversarial circumstance, and I cannot in good conscience cooperate until I've had time to talk to legal counsel and until you've obtained a warrant. And she said, well, that's your right. And I said, I want also for the record to reflect that I didn't consent to have this conversation recorded. And she nodded and then no longer made a point of trying to conceal the recording device that I noticed. But the two of them went to fill out the paperwork and come back with a law enforcement officer. And I turned to Corinne and the kids and I said, get some clothes and get into the van right now. Now, what had happened is that months before, and literally, I think I might have shared this story with you before, Dr. Stan, but it's relevant to our current conversation. Months before, I had been prompted to talk with some friends here in Idaho, where I live, about various emergency scenarios involving everything from really adverse weather to a sudden breakdown of the retail food distribution chain to a complete economic collapse to the possibility of some kind of an adverse experience with the child protection bureaucracy. And the reason why I brought up that scenario is because I've investigated stories of that sort, and I knew that they could descend on you without warning. And so I'd actually made plans. We had contingency plans. We actually had a safe house we could repair to outside the county in a remote area where they were not going to be able to find Corinne and my kids. And we'd actually arranged beforehand to have a cutout, a communication cutout, who could make relay conversations between my children and my wife and myself without providing a bright line that would take somebody right back to the location where I had hidden them. I hated to do this. I really did hate to do this. But the alternative, the potential alternative, was much worse. And so within 5 minutes, we were in the van and we were headed out of the county, and my kids were terrified. They were old enough, the older of them. See, William at the time was not quite 12 years old. Isaiah was about 9, actually he just turned 10, and Jefferson at the time was 8. Our two girls, didn't fully understand what was happening, but they were scared because one of them quietly explained that in circumstances of this sort, it's not unusual for parents and children to be permanently separated. And they were, of course, shaken up by that revelation, and they were crying as we were traveling to our friend's house. But once we got out of the county, I relaxed a little bit, and I was able to take them to our designated safe house to make proper arrangements for communications cut out. And I said, look, I don't know what's going to happen. There's a good possibility that I'm going to be in jail in the next couple of hours because I'm not going to tell them where you are. And if they want to make a point of pressing me for that information, they're not going to get it. Now, they could break me on the wheel, but I'm not going to tell them where you are. So if that's the case, I'll make sure that you are informed, and I gave them a list of people to talk to who would be able to take care of them and manage our affairs in my absence. And so I turned around, took a different route back from the safe house than the one I had taken to get there, and approached my house from a different direction, expecting that it was going to be a crime scene by the time I got back. This all took about an hour or so, a little more than an hour. And on the way home, of course, I was praying literally that I was not going to see our home surrounded by police cruisers and crime scene tape and such like. Well, nobody was there, and so I had a chance to tidy up our house. Look, we have six kids. We're living in a very small duplex. You run the math. It's going to be a little untidy. It was untidy. It was disorganized, but it was not dirty. It was not filthy, and it certainly wasn't neglectful or hazardous. But I've known enough from previous circumstances to know that there are parents who are separated from the kids permanently because they're living in a house that's not quite as antiseptic as a white room. So I went in and cleaned up a little bit, then busied myself with writing and paying bills and so forth. Now, this is where the story gets a little bit strange, Dr. Stan. Up to now, it's quite typical, the stories I've run into of this sort, but this is where it gets a little strange. A police officer, young man, showed up about an hour and a half or so after I'd returned to my house. I thought, okay, well, great, here we go. He's going to come in and check on what's going on. He knocked on the door and said that he'd gotten a report, a completely different report, that our backyard was overgrown with weeds. Now, the weird thing about that is that there's no way somebody can see into our backyard from the road or from any of the neighboring homes because there are large fences that obstructed the view. And you couldn't see through our home into the backyard. You couldn't see into our backyard if you went behind our home because there was a large pasture behind our backyard. And so somebody had phoned in a false report about weeds in our backyard, which, of course, wouldn't be strange that if there were weeds in the backyard. And as it happens, we were renting, so we weren't responsible for that anyway. And I escorted the police officer around, and I showed him. I opened the gate to the backyard. I said, well, here it is. I mean, the lawn's been mowed within the last week or so. I suppose along the fence line there are a few weeds. And he shrugged his shoulders and said, well, that's no big deal. And besides that, you don't own the home. It's the responsibility of the landlord to take care of that, so I don't understand what that report is about. But what that told me is that somebody was barraging officials with reports for the purpose of getting police and child protection services to pay careful attention to our home and our family. Well, that police officer left, and I was shaking my head, pondering the strangeness of it all, when about a half hour later, the social worker showed up in the company of the largest member of the Payette City Police Department. I sort of chuckled to myself because it just struck me as so predictable that they would send the biggest guy on the force. He's somebody I happen to know. And he knocked on the door and he said, look, I've told this young lady that your family is fine. I know your family. I know you. You're not somebody who's been a troublemaker, but we need to clear this up. So would you let us in and take a look around? And I shrugged my shoulders and said, sure, come in and take a look around. Look at anything you'd like to. And I could do that because I didn't care what happened at that point. My wife and kids were safe, and they were going to be safe. They couldn't get to them. And so it took them all of 2.5 minutes to look at our home, and then the police officer shrugged his shoulders and reached over and shook my hand and said, thanks, you know, we're done here. And at that point, the caseworker looked at me, and by way of illustrating your point, Dr. Stan, about the fact that there are people who are decent, well-intentioned folks who work for these bureaucracies, she walked over and shook my hand and said, I want to tell you that when I spoke with you this morning, you were very composed, you were very courteous, you were, of course, insistent on protecting your rights, but you did it in a way that was really respectful, and I appreciate that. And so I shook her hand, and she left, and I let Corinne and the kids stay overnight in the safe house with my friends to make sure that they were okay. But the next morning, I brought them home, and everything just proceeded as before. The difference, of course, was that we were on a little bit higher alert than normal for the next several days. But the reason I share that story in some length is twofold. First of all, to underscore the point you made before about the fact that there are people who are employed in these agencies who are decent folks in a bad situation, in an institutional environment that is hardwired to be inhospitable to the family. And the second reason I shared this is to show that this could happen literally to anybody. Now, we do have some problems in our family circumstance because of the fact that my wife is chronically ill. And she's chronically ill in a way that requires, unfortunately, detailed and frequent contact here with the local medical bureaucracy. Pretty much every couple of weeks she has to go in for an examination. And because of the fact that when I lost my job about 4 years ago, Corinne had been hospitalized several times, and I had a hospitalization of my own a little more than a year ago. It was September 2009 when I almost died from a gastrointestinal infection. That happened after our incident with the child welfare bureaucracy, interestingly enough. That was a rather crowded month for us. But because of that, of course, we were in constant contact here with the county regarding paying off our medical bills and installment plans. That means that we're already on the radar, is what I'm saying. There are already files that are open. There are already people who are having contact with us who represent officialdom. And so that does represent a vulnerability. And any family, even in the best of circumstances, is going to have vulnerabilities like that. There are seams that can be exploited by people who are looking to make inroads into the sovereignty of the family. Now, if you're fortunate, if you're blessed, and if you're a little bit careful in terms of your planning, you could do something about minimizing the risks that you face. Now, I honestly think that if I hadn't taken the time a year and a half or so ago, maybe almost 2 years ago now, to sit down with some friends and make some basic plans about what we would do if somebody ended up being hotlined, I don't think we could have avoided some longer entanglement with the child welfare bureaucracy. If I hadn't met them at the door and not let them into my house, if I had not had that conversation on the front doorstep of our house with the door closed behind me, it's likely that something would have gone amiss. All they have to do is get into your house. And when you're in an adversarial situation of this sort, you cannot afford to let them into your house. You can't afford to let them cross the threshold. You can't afford to cooperate. You can't afford to tell them anything. They may be the most disarmingly, beguilingly innocent people you ever run into, or at least maintain the thought of such. They may be people you know from church. They may be people you knew from high school. But the instant you find yourself in an adversarial situation like that, you cannot afford to let them know anything that they cannot wring from you using the leverage of an actual official warrant. And in many circumstances, you should contest the warrant as well. I mean, Lou Rockwell likes to say that a warrant is a permission slip written by a judge that supposedly permits the government to violate your rights. And there are plenty of circumstances where that cynical description is a careful, accurate description. But the point is, at every point where they could have conducted an inquiry on their own terms, I was able to deter them from doing so. Now, that's not always the case. Sometimes they'll show up in force. And sometimes when they show up in force, the the best thing to do is to avoid a situation where one of your family members can get hurt. And I consider it to be nothing less than an act of God's grace that they didn't show up in force at the initial encounter we had.
Well, I'm glad it worked out as well as it did, but we're getting towards the end of the program, and sure. You know I got so interested in your story, I forgot to ask you to tell our listeners how they can get to your blog, how they can listen to your radio program, and how they can find your PayPal button and help. And certainly we think Woodham is doing a wonderful job. We help to support him, and if any people in the audience would like to help him, he does have a PayPal button, which I talked him into putting. I had the hardest time talking him into putting that PayPal button onto his website, but it is there. William, tell people how they can get in touch with you.
Dr. Stan, I appreciate that so much. The blog is called Pro Libertate, and it's found at freedominourtime.blogspot.com, freedominourtime.blogspot.com, or just go to Google or another search engine and enter my name, William Grigg, and Pro Libertate. chances are if you enter either Pro Libertate or William Grigg, one of the first returns is going to be the blog Pro Libertate. And I try to update it 3 to 5 times a week, depending upon my circumstances. You mentioned, Dr. Stan, that there is a PayPal button at the end of every essay. If people have the means and the interest in donating, I'd sure appreciate that. That's how I'm supporting my family right now. I do have a radio program as well. It's also called Pro Libertate. It's broadcast every Saturday night from 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock Mountain Time, 7 o'clock to 10 o'clock California Time, on the Liberty News Radio Network. And the homepage for Liberty News Radio is libertynewsradio.com. Go to libertynewsradio.com. You should be able to listen to the program by way of live streaming on the Internet. There's also a list of affiliates for people who want to listen to it by way of terrestrial radio. Every program is archived and can be listened to by way of the website, or you can receive them as downloads by way of iTunes. LibertyNewsRadio.com for Pro Libertate Radio every Saturday night from 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock Mountain Time. And I do appreciate, Dr. Stan, the opportunity you gave me to put in those plugs. And I do appreciate everything that you and your audience have done to support us.
Well, we appreciate really your efforts. And for our listeners out there, why you'll find that certainly William's essays, you'll find them at Lou Rockwell. You'll find them posted at certainly at World Affairs Brief, Joel Skousen's site, and sites all across the country. William is one of the people who's really on the front lines of this. He does investigative reporting, has articles that you, on information you won't find elsewhere. But certainly, if you're in a position to help him, why, we'd appreciate it. We think he's doing a great job. He does a lot of research I don't have time to do, so I always look forward to reading his articles, and especially our program here on Friday evening. We'll be back in just a moment to wrap up the program. William, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Dr. Stan, thanks once again. It's always a blessing to be on your program. I really appreciate it.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
You may be new to freeze-dried foods. You may have storable food questions. You may want to buy your freeze-dried foods from a very reputable company and not go broke in the process. Welcome to the Freeze-Dry Guy. Okay, actually, we're more than just one guy. We're a California-based company that's been serving our U.S. military and other government agencies with the finest in freeze-dried storable foods and emergency rations since 1970. See all about us at freezedryguy.com. With Freeze-Dry Guy freeze-dried foods, you can and will be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. Freeze-Dry Guy foods are delicious, require little preparation, and will taste just as fresh decades from now as they do today. Just add hot water and serve. Backpackers consistently rate us number one year after year as the best tasting and ease of preparation. Isn't that what you want for your family? Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD. That's 866-404-3663 or go to freezedryguy.com. Freeze-Dry Guy, the best you can buy.
Where are my car keys? What did I come in this room for? Where did I put that?
A common condition called age-related memory loss is robbing millions of people of their ability to remember and think clearly. And Alzheimer's and Parkinson's are occurring at younger ages, even early 20s and 30s. And there's much evidence that brain inflammation may be the cause. Brain inflammation may also cause depression and insomnia. But there's great news. Studies show by taking special, powerful nutrients, brain inflammation and its damaging effects may be greatly reduced. And that's why neurosurgeon Dr. Russell Blaylock created his brain repair formula to reduce brain inflammation and maintain a healthy brain. So, for a free book on brain health or information on Dr. Blaylock's special brain repair formula, call 1-800-SPECIAL or visit 1-800-SPECIAL.com. 1-800-SPECIAL.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Power Hour Radio Show. Thank you for joining us. It is straight up top of the hour. This is Joy Friley and
Josh.
Yeah, buddy.
Yeah.
My buddy is here today, so we are two in the studio today for you at the Power Hour. So glad you're out there. So glad you are joining us, caring about your world and about every single thing that goes into your body. Of course, yesterday was a little confusing to a lot of people. Do we eat meat? Do we not eat meat? Do we do yoga? Do we... Now, I don't want any more yoga emails, ladies and gentlemen. We let everybody explain their position on the Power Hour. That's one of the things we're known for, is that we don't have an agenda. And if we do have an agenda, it's an agenda to find the truth, because I want to know what works for people. And in the second hour today, you're going to hear from Jenna Leah Hoffman, who has found out what works for her. She is an incredible, accomplished musician who has put her music into a different realm, and that is of helping people that are sick to get better, to feel less pain, and just simply to enjoy the music. So she will be joining us in the second hour. She is she is very accomplished on the wooden flute. Have you ever heard wooden flute, Josh?
Yes.
The Native American flute?
Yes, I have.
Ever played it?
I've never played the wooden flute. No.
Really?
No.
I've got
I mean, I played the recorder, you know, in grade school. But
oh, I'm impressed.
Everyone in the class played recorder.
Yeah, I think we had a tonette. Now, see, you've never heard of a tonette, have
no,
you?
No. I'm more of a strings guy.
No, but I mean, you're just a child in comparison
course,
to
yes.
me, though. That's why
little
the
baby.
Tonette, you never saw a tonette.
No.
But that was the first one. I'd forgotten all about that until you mentioned it. But you had a recorder in your school? Interesting.
Yes.
Well, this wooden flute, I got one because I was so impressed with it. It's really beautiful, the Native American flute. I don't play it like the Native Americans, but it is beautiful, though, when somebody knows how to play it.
Do the cats go running?
No, they don't really come either, but anyway, it's a lot of fun to do. We're going to be talking about music and the uses of music for the positive side. A lot of people say, oh, music is used for a negative reason. Well, wait till you hear this incredibly gorgeous music. I think you will be just in awe, hopefully, like I was when I was able to get her music, and especially the one with the hymns. You're going to hear a Native American flute on Amazing Grace that, oh, it just gives me chills even thinking about it. So you are in the right place today. Thank you for joining us. And if you are listening to the news, well, it's all about the slugfest in the election. That's it. Now they're calling it slugfest. It's because everybody's battling it out for, what, control of the computer that's going to tell them who wins in the first place? I mean, it's just, oof. It just makes you sick watching it, and so we don't focus on that. However, yesterday, the feds got a bit of a smackdown yesterday by Florida saying that they're allowed to go forward. Florida and about 10 other states, I believe it is, are able to go forward with their health care response to Obamacare. In other words, saying that there's a couple of reasons that this case should be allowed to go forward at the Supreme Court level. So we will talk about that. And also, if you got your email blast yesterday, you saw the CIA UFOs.